Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 24, Amatsya, the Lord's Fish Incarnation, Text Number 49. Prayat Prasadayuta Bhagavatlesham Anyetra Deva Guruvo Jana Swayam Kartum Sameta Prabhavanti Pumsas Tam Ishvaram Tvam Sharanam Prapadye. Na not yet prasada of the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Achyuta Bhaga Lesham. Only 1/10,000th. Anye, others. Cha, also. Deva, even the demigods. Guruva, the so-called gurus. Jana, the total population. Swayam, personally. Kartum, to execute. Sumeta, altogether. Prabhavanti, can become equally able. Pumsaha, by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Tam, unto him. Ishvaram, unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Tvam, unto you. Sharanam, shelter. Prapadye, let me surrender. Translation of purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Neither all the demigods, nor the so-called gurus, nor all other people, either independently or together, can offer mercy that equals even 1/10,000th of yours. Therefore, I wish to take shelter of your lotus feet. Srila Prabhupada's purport. It is said, Kamaistaista Ridhigana Prabhadyantena Devata. People in general, being motivated by material desires, worship the demigods to get fruit results very easily, quickly. People generally do not become devotees of Lord Vishnu, since Lord Vishnu never becomes the order supplier of his devotee. Lord Vishnu does not give a devotee benedictions that will create a further demand for benedictions. By worshiping the demigods, one may get results, but as described in Bhagavad Gita, antavat tupalam te sham, whatever great benedictions one may achieve from the demigods are all temporary, because the demigods themselves are temporary. Their benedictions are also temporary and have no permanent value. Those who aspire for such benedictions have a poorer fund of knowledge. Tadbhaval yopamedasa. The benedictions of Lord Vishnu are different. By the mercy of Lord Vishnu, one can be completely freed from material contamination and go back home, back to Godhead. Therefore, the benedictions offered by the demigods cannot compare to even 1/10,000th of the Lord's benedictions. One should not, therefore, try to obtain benedictions from the demigods or false gurus. One should aspire only for the benediction offered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As the Lord says in the Bhagavad Gita, 1866, Sarva Dharma Prajaja Mamekam Sharanam Vraja Ahang Tvang Sarapa Bebyo Mokshi Syamima Suchaha. Abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender unto me. I shall deliver you from all sinful reactions. Do not fear. This is the greatest benediction. Text again. Neither all the demigods nor the so-called gurus nor all other people, either independently or together, can offer mercy that equals even 1/10,000th of yours. Therefore, I wish to take shelter of your lotus feet. In the material world, in material consciousness, that in the material world, in the material consciousness, everyone is hungry, because that's the nature of material existence, is that we feel we're lacking something, because the body has demands. Demands means that the body is telling us it's lacking something. So that doesn't mean necessarily that we just deny what the body's lacking and say, well, I'm a spiritual soul, you're a body, and I'm different from you, so forget about it. Good luck, body. Do it yourself. I have nothing to do with you. That's a very high platform. But that platform is only possible when one is actually on the spiritual platform. Without being completely on the spiritual platform, we have to take care of this body. Just like Raghunath Das Goswami, in his later years, he was eating a little bit of buttermilk every other day. So buttermilk, if you ever have buttermilk, is the which is left over after you take all the cream out of the milk. That's called the buttermilk. No one has ever gotten fat by drinking buttermilk, because there's no fat. But he was just taking a little bit of buttermilk every other day. And his body was very weak because of that. Matter of fact, he was constantly shivering because of the weakness of his body. But it is said that in the spiritual world, he was having 3 big feasts a day. So externally, he appeared to be one thing, but internally, he was enjoying unlimited pleasure in the spiritual world. And luckily, you don't get fat there no matter how much you eat. That's one of the big benedictions of going to the spiritual world. You can have unlimited prasadam, and still you never get sick or you never get fat. Unless you're Madhu Mangal, because he does it excessively. Madhu Mangal is a Brahmin amongst the cowherd boys, and he likes laddus. So he's always eating laddus. And of course we have Laddu Gopal, who has the same laddu. Every time I look at Laddu Gopal, he always has the same laddu. So he's very slow at eating. But Madhu Mangal eats a lot of laddus every day. But here, if we eat a lot of laddus, we can't digest them usually, and we get fat. That's if we can digest them. Otherwise, we get sick. So, it is said, Atahara viharas, Atihara priyasis cha prajalpa niyamagraha, because everyone is hungry. We don't really realize we're hungry most of the time. When we get depressed, even when we're tired, tired is just another way of saying we're hungry for sleep. And most of the time that's because we don't breathe enough air. We don't know how to breathe. We go, oh, I'm full of air. And the body's going, I'm hungry for air. And we go, okay. Because we're a little lazy, we don't even breathe. We're so much on the mental platform, you know. When is prasadam, what's in prasadam? We can't even how to take a breath. And then when it's time for prasadam, oh, I'm not hungry. Or my mind says, eat anyhow. You waited so long to get the prasadam. And then we go, oh, I'm sick. Why don't I listen to my mind? Oh, anyhow. So atiyahara means eating too much. Generally speaking, everyone's hungry. And finally, they get the food that they're looking for. And then they overindulge. Because they don't know what too much or too little is. They have no experience. They're following their mind around. Either the mind's here and they're too little, or the mind's there, it's too much. And as soon as it's too much, then there's priasis, there's over-endeavor. That's how the yugas change. Satyuga, people are satisfied just by meditating on the spiritual world. They're in ecstasy all the time. And therefore, the demigods reciprocate, because that ecstasy goes up to the demigods and inspires them, and especially inspires Krishna. And he tells the demigods, provide everything without any problem. So the demigods supply rain, because they have that power. And they supply the sunlight, they supply the air, they supply everything. And therefore everything grows easily in abundance. And therefore one doesn't have to worry about eating, because everything is there. You just go out and you pick the fruit, the flowers, the vegetables, everything is there in abundance. And as soon as people thought, well, yesterday that mango tasted great. Wow, that was a great mango. Maybe if I eat two of them today, it'll taste twice as good. And then you eat two and you go, wait a second. It wasn't twice as good as it was yesterday. Maybe I got to eat three times more. And after a while, then one forgets what one is actually trying to achieve, namely Krishna consciousness. Instead of eating to live, one starts to live to eat. And that's when Treta Yuga starts. And in order to make up for this in order to purify one's consciousness, one has to take that extra mango and throw it into the fire. No, I don't want that. Swaha! That's called renunciation. Therefore, sacrifice. Sacrifice things that we don't need. People think sacrifice in the spiritual and religious societies is you take a little child and you say, you're too much of a burden, I don't need you. Swaha! Into the sacrifice. That's not what sacrifice means. It means the things that we actually don't need that are offerable to Krishna. We throw the grains or the ghee or something into the fire sacrifice, because we don't need these things. We don't need so many grains. We don't have to eat so much ghee. And if we don't eat too much and we don't endeavor, then we become pacified. We can actually meditate on Krishna. We're not running here and there looking for gratifying our senses. We can look inside and think about Krishna. Or externally, we eat enough so we can dance and chant and talk about Krishna. Because by doing that, one can actually become conscious of Krishna, and Krishna is the reservoir of unlimited love that everyone's looking for. Actually, everyone is hungry for affection and love and pleasure. But outside of affection and love, there can't actually be real pleasure. As long as this has this attitude, I want to exploit something, how can you actually be happy? Because actually the nature of the soul is to love and serve out of pleasure. And if one is not feeling that, wants to get some exploitation without love and affection, then it can't actually be, in the long run, pleasurable. It can temporarily satisfy one's desire to exploit, but that's not really real happiness. Therefore, if one can take the sense objects that are necessary in order to maintain a healthy body, then one can utilize that body easily in Krishna service, happily in Krishna service, and ultimately, without so many external desires, one can happily think about Krishna. As I used to say, that in our movement, if you simply go out and distribute books, Prabhupada's books, then Krishna will supply everything you need. And nowadays we say, if you simply get everything you need, then you'll get inspired to go out and distribute Prabhupada's books. If you gratify every desire you have, then you can think about Krishna. Usually it's, if you think about Krishna, all your desires will actually be satisfied. Not that just by thinking about Krishna in our particular stage, we're not going to try and take care of our body or take care of others. But if we think about Krishna, then we'll happily do it in Krishna consciousness. We won't eat the samosa and we think, that wasn't good enough. I need another one. Wait a sec. I need two more. Wait, they got an extra one than I do. How did they get an extra one? I need another three. I'm going to prove it to you. I'm better than you. You can't get more samosas than me. I'm more powerful. I deserve more. And then slowly the concentration on Krishna goes off. And my God, where am I? What is this place I'm in? It's a Hare Krishna movement. How did I get here? I didn't even know I was here for 3 years. And I finally woke up. So Krishna says we have to withdraw our mind back and remember why we're here. Otherwise, what is this thing about the demigods? No one believes in demigods nowadays. We find devotees sometimes with headphones, you know, and they're listening to rock music. They're going. The old favorite songs, you know, I just can't give this up. I'm a, you know. But we never, generally we never go, you know, secretly, you know, we enter into devotees, they're living in their own room, we enter into the room, and there's a little, you know, Durga Devi, and the devotees worshiping the Durga Devi. Just can't give it up. At least not in the Western world. So what is this thing about demigods? Probably keeps on talking about the demigods. Generally speaking, we don't believe in demigods. We hardly believe in Krishna. What to speak of a demigod? But the demigods are actually, if we use a little intelligence, you know, supplying the air, the rain, so we say, all right, they might be there. So what? I go and pray to the demigods. He's still, even I pray to the sun, he still comes up in the morning every time anyhow, whether I pray or not. So why should I waste my prayers, you know? My dear son God, please come up tomorrow. Look, he came up because of my prayers. If I stop praying, it won't come up. No, we worship other things other than the demigods. You know, rock and music favorites and movie stars and athletes, politicians sometimes. My old friend, my old soulmates from back in high school or college. We're worshipers by nature. And if we worship these things, then we always remain hungry. Doesn't matter how much we worship, you know, remember the old songs. It just, we're always hungry because it never really satisfies us. And therefore, although we worship them, maybe we get a little taste out of the worship. After all, if you go to a rock concert, which I don't suggest, but if you do, or a football game, then you see people are so enthusiastic. They're actually outside their material, you know, problems for a few moments because their favorite team kicked the ball into the net. They become ecstatic. My God, the clouds have opened up, the sun is shining, the angels are appearing, that ball went into the net. My life is practically complete. Until the other team kicks the ball into the net and I think I'll jump off the nearest roof. Life is bad. So it's the agony and the ecstasy in the material world. The demigods give their benedictions, or these other people give a benediction, and we're ecstatic, But then we get tired of it after some time. I pray to Uma, please give me a nice wife. She sent me this beautiful girl, and I was in ecstasy for 2 days. Then I realized that she wasn't really my soulmate, and I don't know how to get rid of her. Uma, can you take her back, please? It wasn't exactly what I wanted. And then after some time of praying to Uma, you realize that there's no living entity in any universe that will actually satisfy you. And you blame it on Uma, Mother Durga. Why couldn't you create someone who could satisfy me? What's wrong with you? The whole universe is meant here for my happiness. And there's nothing I can find that's going to make me happy. But still one goes on life after life, praying to the demigods, praying to the bank teller. Nowadays people don't go to church. They go to the bank and pray to the manager in the bank. My dear bank manager, please, I beg of you. I'm your humble servant. Please give me a loan. Just give me another credit card. I promise I'll surrender my life after life to paying it back. So we're worshipers, we're surrendered to something we have because our nature is we're tiny, we're insignificant, and we're always dependent on others. And therefore, unless we know what the aim of life is, we simply fall into whatever attracts our mind. And what is modern society? It's simply meant to attract the minds of the living entities into something insignificant. And make it great and insignificant. I mean, who in their right mind, when they think about it, would become ecstatic just because someone is able to kick a ball into a net? Now, I can kick a ball into the net, too, if I stand 1 inch away from the net and kick the ball. But how many people will actually go, wow, that's fantastic. It made my year. People couldn't care. Couldn't care if the ball's in the net, outside the net. It's just an imagination, that's all. It's a happiness based upon imagination. Something concocted. Based upon whatever everyone else thinks is important. 300 years ago, if you put up a net and kicked the ball from, 100 meters away, kicked into the net, no one could care less. Big deal. What's so important about your accomplishment? It's useless. Why are you kicking this ball into the net? Why don't you do something useful? Get a job. Make something out of your life. But nowadays, because people are because they're hypnotized, because they're bewildered, if someone is able to, they've made it a mutual illusion amongst themselves that if someone can kick a ball in the net, it has any significance whatsoever. So 99.9% of the world nowadays is going on just because of mutual illusion, mutual ignorance. Te vidu svartikatim hi Vishnu. They don't know that the goal of life is to obtain Krishna, and when they actually attain Krishna, something significant happens. They become happy, they become loving, they become affectionate, they become devoted, they become sane. That's called knowledge, being sane. Doesn't mean you know a whole bunch of verses or you know how many times Christopher Columbus sailed back and forth from Europe to America. Knowledge means becoming sane, becoming conscious of reality. So most of the propaganda is just meant to make people foolish. To help them become devotees of things that have no meaning whatsoever in their real existence, even their physical existence. Watch and see when all the food disappears, or if the food disappears, how many people are going to go to the football games? Just like we have our feasts, quote, feasts. Now, how many people actually come and want to hear the lecture? Some people do. They get their senses are gratified. their minds are gratified when they hear our philosophy. Maybe, fortunately, the person who's speaking, he says a couple of jokes and people wake up. Wow. Now I know why I came here. But practically speaking, no one's going to come. There's no prajana, including the devotees. Sometimes we find the devotees never come to the lecture. They go to even before the prasadam is served, they go in the back where the prasadam is, they make their plate and go to the room, eat and go sleep. That's the Sunday feast. Because we want to get knowledge of how to satisfy our senses, spiritually and materially. And if we don't get spiritual satisfaction, then we turn to the demigods, or we turn to the rock star, or we turn to so many different things, trying to gratify our senses. But it's most people, like the animals in the desert, probably compares it to. They're in the desert, they die because there's no water. But sometimes some fortunate animals, they're in the oasis, and they're getting plenty of nutrition and sustenance, but then they see a mirage in the desert and they run after it. So most people are simply animals in the desert. They have no sustenance. Whatever mirage they see, they run after. But the most unfortunate thing is that actually those who are in an oasis who have the opportunity to just bow their heads down and get the nourishment that they're actually looking for. But they see some oasis out in the desert and they run after it and then they die because it's just an illusion. So the most unfortunate thing is those who actually have some awareness of Krishna consciousness and yet they run after the illusions in the desert. When they can just lower their heads and get the nourishment, the spiritual nourishment, the gratification of their spiritual senses that they're looking for, and their material senses. That's the most unfortunate thing. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions or comments? Yes. There's no internet. We're fasting from the internet today?
Okay, so we need a microphone. The demigods are fulfilling their devotees' desires because demigods are devoted to Krishna, right? And this is their duty. This is what they have to do. So this is why they are doing it. Because otherwise I would think that the demigods would just want to bring you closer to Krishna, maybe, in a way.
Well, it's not that the demigods fulfill everyone's desires. It's not quite like that. We have to deserve also. I mean, I may go back to my room and start praying to Kuvera, please send me, you know, a Mercedes Benz. Now, I have to have some merit in order to, you know, I have to either perform the proper ceremonies, and then Kuvera may reciprocate if I actually do the proper chant. I get a priest who's capable of chanting the proper mantras in order to get that result. But paying for priests costs money too. And then the priest has to get all the material. That costs money too. And it takes time. So I invest the time, the money, and I have to have the faith that Kuvera is actually going to reciprocate and that someone's going to drive up in a Rolls Royce. But I don't believe it, first of all. Nor do I have the money. Nor do I can find a priest nowadays who's going to do it. So I can go in my room and pray, my dear Kuvera, and Kuvera said, well, where's, you know, I'm supposed to get paid for the Rolls Royce. you know, you're supposed to do the sacrifice, you chant the mantras properly, probably through a priest, and you have to do the, etc. So you can go in your room all day long, pray for Rolls Royce. And maybe, if you have some, you know, you put a little devotion into it, and remember Krishna sometimes, someone will drive up with a 1950 Ford or something. But you're not going to get exactly what you wanted, because you don't deserve it. There's a process. The Vedas are a billion verses telling you how to deserve what you got to do to fulfill your desire. And if you don't do it, then you get actually what you deserve, not just what you desire.
Thank you.
It's like someone's eating all day long, prasadam hopefully, and then they're going to the room and praying to the demigod of weight losing to please help me lose weight. What can the demigod do? The demigod will say, well, why don't you stop eating so much? That's how he can help you. He doesn't cast his magic wand and, oh my God, look at that. Lost all this weight. No, he gives the intelligence. Probably gives the example that you go to the sun god and you offer him a lamp during the day when the sun's out, praying to him for health. But what's the actual benefit? Do you think the sun god says, well, yeah, it's a little cold. Thank you for the lamp. I can warm some of my rays on your lamp. No, the idea is you go out into the sun, you get the sun rays, they have all kinds of energies, ultraviolet rays, vitamin D, whatever else. And therefore you become healthy by worshiping the sun, because you're doing something practical, you're out in the sun. Anything else? Yes. We have a...
Thank you for the class. I wanted to ask, because I'm from a Hindu, like I was raised Hindu.
I hope
Hindu.
I didn't insult you.
There's a lot of devotees in the UK who are from like Hindu background, and even in devotee weddings, you see they do like a Ganesh puja before the wedding. So I don't know if that's like Karmakanda, or is that...
Why do they do the Ganesh Puja before the wedding?
To remove obstacles.
For what? Someone's gonna stop the wedding. What are they doing it for?
I don't know. They just do it.
Do they know what they're doing it for?
Probably not.
So what can you do? Does Ganesh know why they're doing it? He probably doesn't. What are these people doing wasting my time? No, I mean, there's Bharat Maharaj. He was actually worshiping the demigods, but he was doing them in relation to Krishna because he saw them as great devotees of Krishna. Therefore, he worshiped them. And Ganesh is in the Brahma Samhita. I mean, most of us aren't in the Brahma Samhita. He's there because his tumuli, his tusks, are touching the lotus feet of Nrsingadev all the time. And therefore he's most auspicious. Therefore we worship Ganesh because of that, because he's a great devotee. But to worship him for, you know, without that connection with Krishna, especially if we don't know why we're doing it, it's just, you know, it's not very productive.
Yeah.
It's just... The example is given that one priest, he had a cat. So before he did the fire sacrifice, he didn't know what to do with the cat. So he tied the cat to a pole next to the fire sacrifice. So this went on for some years. And then after he left, his disciples thought that part of the ritual is to tie a cat to a pole before the sacrifice. So that became the parampara. You, before any sacrifice, you had to tie a cat to the pole.
Oh.
So we should know why we're doing things. That's what Krishna told his father, Nanda Maharaj, before the Govardhan Pooj sacrifice.
Yeah, I mean, I hope they know. I just don't know.
What's that?
I hope they know, when they're getting married, which I just don't
well,
know.
Well, we'd hope that they know that it has some relation with Krishna.
Yeah.
But probably if you tell them, it'd probably be a better chance that they know.
Thank you.
Anything else? Kuala Grantaraj Shrimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.